This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. Just wanted to give a little pre-episode disclaimer. The following episode was recorded before the Wizards of the Coast Pinkerton scandal, as well as subsequent TTRPG debacles. I'm recording this on the day of release, so there may have been even more by the time I even press post. We plan to discuss the larger issues surrounding a lot of these controversies in a future episode, as our feelings are still evolving, but we did want to give you some context as to why we don't mention any of those things. It's because they hadn't happened yet. And if they had, some of our sentiments probably would have shifted. Thank you and enjoy the episode.
Hello, halflings. It's me, Olivia Kennedy. But you can call me Liv. How do I do this? But today I am joined by... Oh God, I lost it.
You are joined by me. That's Jeremy. Hey, but German-fested calls me Germaine. They explain their name is also Germaine, okay. But there are not very many of them where they live. Mm-hmm. But everyone keeps calling them Jeremy, so they decided to swap. I get to be Germaine, and they'll just be Jeremy for a day. So there you go, yeah. German-fested. Yeah. Yeah, but good. It's not just me who's here. Who else is here, Liv?
We are also joined. I'm shaking. I'm so excited by this revelation that we are joined by the one and only Connie Chang.
Hello. It's me.
Hello.
Chang is in the house. Hi.
Oh, my God.
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe. Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Yeah! We love to see it. We love that.
We have been Changified. Thank you so much, Connie, for joining us.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for having me. It is always such a pleasure to be on anything Three Black Halflings related. It feels like I'm back home. It feels like I'm back in the Shire, and I'm warming up for, you know, for my second breakfast with a little platter of sausages, and I'm ready to talk goss. Talk hot goss.
Yes.
Yes, you are here to chat some hot goss. Liv's already got tea. I love
it. I really do.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you, Liv. What kind of tea is it?
It's just a classic PG tips. I wish I had some Yorkshire, but this'll do, you know? It's fine.
Any port in a storm, as they say. We are here to talk about the recent D&D Creator Summit. Basically, because this is such a... I feel like this was the biggest news of the TTRPG sphere this year after the OGL debacle. Mm-hmm. I feel like this has been the biggest news slash controversy to have happened. And it has implications not only for the future of D&D as a brand, but also its relationships with the people who make the game great. Not just the creative team, but also the influencers, creators, who create stuff to help popularize the game. And help make the whole experience of being a D&D fan much more rich and exciting.
Yeah.
This I was unable to attend. Three of Black Halflings were invited, but I was unable to attend because I was DMing on another show. Mm. Liv, you were there for part of it, right?
I was there for the first half of it. I left before everything kicked off and I missed everything because I was like, nothing's going on here. And then I was like, it is 10 o'clock in where I live. So So yeah, then I dipped. So.
Yeah, and the online experience, one of the consistent things that I've heard is that the online experience differed drastically from the experience of the people who were actually physically present in the room, the physical attendees. So Connie, as a physical attendee, thank you so much for coming here to talk about this with us.
Yeah, of course. Literally, yeah. Several people from like various different channels have reached out to me at this point, being like, "Oh, I'd love to have you on. I'd love, you know, for you to talk." But I feel very hesitant about, I guess, like any sort of public on the record written statement about my perspective for this event, just because of the intense, virulent harassment that has been following like basically any kind of creator that has said anything like adjacent to positive, right? Or even just neutral about Wizards. And we'll get into that in a second. And you know me, like I have feelings about Wizards, right? And I have thoughts and feelings about the direction of the company and about how they've been handling a lot of things from accessibility to equity to representation, literally everything. So, you know, I'm definitely not like a just like a praise Watsy, you know, like whatever, like I'm very much like a critical thinker, right? So you know, Three Black Halflings, I love y'all and I trust y'all immensely, and I love what you all do with the show, and I love the values you all have, and I have a relationship with the hosts of this show, right? I have a relationship with both of you, right? And I know you all as like people, which is why I think it's important for me to contextualize why I'm willing to like go on the record here and talk about my experiences here. Whereas I've been as a specific individual involved in this event, have been fairly tight-lipped about it on Twitter and even on my TikTok and other platforms. And that has been for a reason. But this feels like, you know, of all the ways to kind of talk openly and candidly about my experiences, this feels like the one that makes the most sense for me, right? In lieu of just doing kind of like a, on my own terms, transplaner stream about it, which I'd thought about, but I think ultimately, I think I want to focus that channel on just AP based content and like leave anything adjacent to discourse for like a talk show, like Three Black Halflings, right? With hosts and folks who are also, you know, my peers, my colleagues, and who understand where I'm coming from. So that is kind of like the that is the my big preamble before I get into stuff.
Yeah.
That feels, you know, unfortunately necessary to say up front.
Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for trusting us with this, and hopefully anyone who has been following us for any reasonable length of time understands that we are also no big fans of a lot of what Wizards of the Coast has been doing, though the show exists in part as a direct reaction to that, to the way that they've been handling the brand for a long, long time. And of course, anyone who has seen our interview with Kyle Brink knows that we are not necessarily the friendliest towards that whole I don't bear them ill will as people, but corporations are not people, and I do not feel great about the corporation. So I guess, should we go ahead and jump in? What was the init? Because I never, even though we were invited, I never actually saw the email. What was the initial contact that you received from Wizards?
That's really interesting that you never actually saw the email, because my initial contact was an email. Like on, I actually have it pulled up right here, so I don't like misquote anything. But on March 1st of this year, 2023, I received an email from someone who is not like a direct contractor or employee of Wizards, but works for like a influencer campaign management company, essentially like a content creator relations slash like marketing and maybe event planning company. I got to meet some of the people who are part of that company at the summit later on, and they clarified their business relationship with Watsy to me. So they're the people who reached out initially, and I think this is important when we get into miscommunications later on, were not directly under like Wizards management or purview of any kind. I think they were kind of like outsourced to handle some of the influencer slash content creator relations here. So I got the Watsy Summit invitation over email, and it was from this person who was very sweet and kind, you know, like every pretty much like the people, the face-to-face people that I've talked to on the ground level have all been very sweet and kind and great folks, right? So any criticisms, right, and any like critiques and anything that I say from this point forward, like you said, Jeremy, are leveled like toward the corporation, right, as opposed to like the specific individuals working there. So with that out of the way, got the invitation. I was told in the body of the email some of the context behind why they were putting on a WotC Consecrator Summit. And I just sort of like read the text out loud. So there's like no, like no degree of misinterpretation here, right?
Okay, sure.
So the body of the email says, in December of 2022, our team had the opportunity to attend PAX Unplugged and interact with tons of members of the TTRPG creator community. And something that came up consistently in these conversations was a desire from you, the community we serve, to have more chances to see Wizards staff in person, more chances to provide feedback on how our team can improve the experience of making D&D content, and more chances to see what's next for D&D. The D&D creator relations team, many members of whom we met during the summit, has been cooking up some new ideas for how we can best meet these goals, and we'd love to invite you to the first step. So then there's some information about the date and the address. It's at Washington is at their headquarters. That's public information. And like early April for like the actual date of the summit. And it goes on to say this event will be a chance to see what some of what our teams have been working on, including, and this is in parentheticals, including the D&D VTT and the D&D rules update, end parentheticals, ask questions, give feedback, and connect with members of our studio and content teams. There will be no content requirements, nor will Wizards be taking or using any footage, photos, or recordings for any purpose. Any information we share with you during the summit, you are free to share with your community. Additionally, our team will cover your travel, lodging, and per diem costs for this event. And then it kind of ends off with like a nice paragraph being like, thanks for reading this email. Like, we'd be excited to have you on board, stuff like that. And then a sign off.
Okay.
So that's okay. That's the initial reach out email.
Immediately to me, it sounds like they're trying to frame it around like, oh, at PAX Unplugged, we decided that we wanted to chat with creators more. When I literally thought this summit was reactionary in terms of everything that happened earlier in the year with the OGL fiasco. So maybe that they were just trying to not make it seem like that. And if they were trying to make it not seem like that, they didn't do a very good job to me. I don't know.
It could be that like this was something that they had planned, but was not really being pushed heavily until that. And then they're like, once the OGL thing happened, they decided to move it up in the docket and make it more of a priority. Or it actually could just be a genuine like, oh yeah, that just also happened to happen.
Could be. So that was kind of the vibe I got at the summit. Like, and we can get into like, because the summit is so, in my mind now, kind of confusing about the timeline. There was just a lot of miscommunication, I think, from a lot of angles. So I'm going to just try to be as chronological about this as possible. So just based on this email, and then later on, based on some conversations I had, which I'll get into in a second, with both members of the content relations team, as well as like some of their studio teams, that you're right, Jeremy, this a content creator summit had been in the works for some time, definitely preceding everything that came out about the OGL. So that had kind of been in the works, but I think you're right, like the OGL stuff kind of expedited it, kind of like, I think lit a fire underneath WotC a bit to be able to like have some face time with the community that, you know, a lot of trust was ruptured between them and the community of, right? So that is my knowledge of this, and also my knowledge of this just based on conversations I had with some content creator relations team members at the summit, that basically there was an initial idea for what the summit would be coming from those folks from the content relations team. And then when it was kind of pitched higher up, it got turned into something else. Like executives kind of got their hands on it, and they were kind of like, oh, this is an opportunity for a product showcase. This is an opportunity for us to inject some like business stuff into this, right? So whatever initial intentions from the content relations team about maybe even like a genuine like face-to-face, let's talk about the future of WotC, let's talk about your place in it, let's talk about these issues that are important to you. You know, as it went down the pipeline, right, as it went through the red tape of bureaucracy and whatnot, it may be, you know, parts of it got changed into this, right? And then there's that added layer, I think, of miscommunication. The fact that the person that had reached out to us was not a member of the content creator team or a member of any of WotC's teams. It was this third party, like marketing, you know, or like event organization or organizing like company, right? So they probably had some like my thoughts, and this is just an assumption. These folks probably had some notes that they received from like WotC about, here are some things to put in the body of your email as you're organizing this event. And they just did the best they could with the information they were given. And they, you know, like they, I doubt that these people who sent out the email had a full knowledge or full context of every step that this event had gone through before it reached them.
Right. Because what you just read actually reminds me a little bit of the email that we received initially inviting us to interview Kyle Brink, which is to say that it was like, hey, we want to give you an opportunity to ask whatever questions you want. You can publish it however you want. You can edit it however you want. You get to do with the footage what you want. We will give you this long of a slot. You just tell us when you're available. And it sounds like, oh, okay, like this is so we can ask you anything and we get to choose. You don't get to have any say in how we present this information. What they're saying to you, it sounds in a similar, it sounds like a similarly positive thing to be like, hey, we want to give you an opportunity to give feedback. Because the notice, they list the feedback first. They do specifically mention products, but it's like, we want to give you feedback and also showcase some products in parentheses, you know, the VTT, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, oh, great, we'll get to give feedback. And then they'll tell us about stuff that's coming up. Mm-hmm. That is literally what I think of when I hear what you just read.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think go ahead.
I was just going to say, was that your expectation based on was that how you read it as well?
100% that was how I read it. And I would not have attended if it was just going to be a product showcase. I had work at the time, you know, and I this kind of coincided with a lot of stuff happening on my end with TTRPGs and my day job, like starting to kick off a bit. Mm-hmm. So my decision to attend was very much rooted in the context of, oh, I'll have a chance to like voice my concerns, right, and give my actionable feedback, right? Not just about the overall business direction of D&D and Wizards of the Coast and how they've been handling it, but also about like, you know, a lot of this ruptured trust between various content creator ecosystems and this product that a lot of us have hitched our horses to, for lack of a better term, and for better and for worse, right? And you're right, kind of up front, the first paragraph in which they actually explain what this is, they contextualize it as being like, the feedback we got during PAX Unplugged was that the content creator community wanted to have more FaceTime with Wizards staff and more chances specifically to give that feedback on how we can, this is a direct quote, improve the experience of making D&D content, right? Which to me thinks like, oh, accessibility, equity, representation, and also like maybe some tools-based things, maybe some mechanical things, but like mostly about like my relationship to this product and the brand and its reputation in the space, right? As well as like more chances to see what's next for D&D, which is fine and great. Like, sure, yeah, like show us what you're cooking up with D&D Beyond and the VTT and all that stuff, right? Like, I'm not going to say no to that, but the main reason I'm going is to have that FaceTime with execs and with staff and to be like, hey, so this has kind of sucked, like major donkey butt. And here are my thoughts about how it can suck less major donkey butt, right? So it's...
And they're paying for it, which is like the other thing that makes it... To me, reading that, I'm like, okay, see now this... Before, if it's like, you can come, you know, if you can afford it. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, no, we actually want you to come and tell us stuff. That sounds to me like they're acting on good faith. This is like a straightforward goodwill gesture.
Yes.
That's where it really reminds me of the email that we got about the Kyle Brink thing, where it's like, no, you do with the footage what you want. You can publish it, edit it. Yeah. We have no say in how you do this.
And it also, like, immediately, like, it reminds me of, because at the start, I did see a few people, because it at the very start, it kind of went a bit late. And there were a few people who were saying, like, oh, I'm a full-time content creator. I have to go and do other stuff. Like, I have to make, you know, I have to go make things. So there was, like, even just at the start, there was that. But then also the fact that you went into this with different expectations, Connie, like that, it was a little bit of a time waste, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I, you know, and we'll get into the actual like day of the summit itself in a second, I'm sure. But like that was that feeling of, what am I doing here? Like very much kept creeping up over the course of that particular summit day. But yeah, I had, like Jeremy said, like I had every reason to believe this was a gesture in good faith. And I had no reason to believe that this would just kind of be like a PR event or like a marketing event or like a product showcase or even like a focus group or something, right? Like my assumption, especially because they offer to like cover travel, lodging, and per diem, which is like a very baseline, kind of like the bar is really low here, like to remove like, you know, know, obstacles for people to be able to attend and offer our voices and make them heard, right? So like, I definitely wouldn't have been able to attend if they weren't covering travel and lodging and per diem, right? Like, and even with that covered, people were still losing money by being there because we weren't making content, you know, like we weren't doing the thing that actually generates our income as content creators, right? Especially those who depend on a lot or a majority of, if not all of our income on this sort of stuff, right? So at the time of receiving the email, you know, I was like, oh, this seems like something that might actually be valuable. Like, I have a lot of ideas about race, you know, and now the pivot to species. I have a lot of thoughts about cultural representation in the game. I have a lot of thoughts about D&D's relationship to actual plays, you know, and their relationship to just the content creator communities in general, and like ideas about how we can go about repairing trust and, you know, all that stuff, you know, and I came with my notebooks, you know, and I came ready to take notes about their thoughts about the future of D&D and the brand's relationship to us. And that just didn't really end up happening on their end.
Yes. And before we get to that, because we absolutely do need to talk about the event itself, we would be remiss if we did not touch on the reaction from those who it seems like exclusively the people who reacted negatively were people who did not see this email. But there appears to have been. I confess, I really only saw maybe one tweet that directly addressed it. And I think we all know exactly, based on your smile, you know exactly which tweet I'm talking about. Apparently there were many, many others that I did not see, but there seemed to have been a huge backlash against creators once people started to announce. Now, here's the interesting thing. I didn't see Wizards announcing that this was happening.
I did not
see Wizards of the Coast saying, hey, everyone, guess what? We're inviting people to do this, 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 and this. I saw content creators, mainly a lot of the smaller ones, who saw this as like a form of like a legitimacy. Like, oh, they respect me as a content creator, as somebody in this space. Yeah, go ahead, Liv.
I was saying, it was a big thing. When I was in office, I'll be really quick with this. There were a few people who actively said, and they're like, yeah, I was shocked to be invited here. Absolutely. I could see why people would post about it and be like, hey, gang.
Yeah, and they seemed really happy and excited that they're going to get to go, and not just like, ooh, yay, I got picked, but more of like a, wow, I'm being given power to go in and give feedback and get to meet and network with other people, and we can help and try and change and form the way the game is going. That was the impression that I got from the posts that I saw. Did you, Connie or Liv, see any? Well, we should probably talk about the actual, the big tweet, and then anything else that we wish on this topic. Does somebody other than me want to jump in? because I've been talking so much. Does anybody else want to jump in and talk about Linda Codega's tweet, which I believe is the thing that really kicked it off for a lot of people? It was a tweet thread, really.
Yes, I can tank this. I can go ahead and talk. So I'll first start with like the initial tweets, which were people announcing, right, that they were going, right? So there were I want to say maybe it started with like, I saw my timeline maybe a half dozen, and then it wrapped up to maybe about a dozen people, like around that number, were announcing like, hey folks, like I'm so excited to have been, it's like to the degree of like, I'm excited to have been invited to this content creator summit. Like a couple of the tweets thanked Wizards, being like, oh, thank you for the invitation. Like, thank you Wizards team for like having me on. Like, I'm so excited to share what comes out of it. Like general kind of tweets like that. Not too much information in them because the only information we had was that there was a summit and we were invited, right? Like that was the only info we were given. So my perspective of what went down is at first, there was like this burst of positivity, right? There was an initial flare of positivity on the timeline, and folks in the replies were like mostly congratulating people for going or being like, whoa, this is so awesome, this is so cool, like I hope you have a great time, da 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 da. I also want to note that a lot of the people who posted about this, at least in my circles, because most of my circles are of this demographic, that I could see were people of color. There were a lot of trans people, queer people, and people of color posting about like having been invited, and it is really interesting.
Same for me.
Yeah, because something you bring up that I want to address for a second here is that there were some folks who were like smaller creators who they seemed surprised, right, to have been invited to this event. And I think there's a degree of surprise, you know, from myself as well about like the kinds of folks who were invited. I'm really happy that they were. And I, if I had a feeling, and I still have a feeling, that the folks in charge of the invite lists were the people part of the content creator relations team, who are like very queer and like very representationally minded, and like who care about diversity and inclusion in the space, who probably did the work to do the research, you know, for like the more indie creators who aren't as big, who haven't been on as many things, but who are still doing really good work in the space. So that is my hunch about why those folks were invited. And I, you know, my hunch is all very positive, right? I think it came from a really good faith place about the kinds of folks who were chosen. And I think there was a lot of intentionality on the content creator relations team to invite folks who were diverse. Because when we showed up, like, I would say it was maybe like 50-50 white folks and people of color, I would say. There maybe more like 60-40, you know, like, but I was surprised by the number of people of color who were there in person, in a good way. Like, surprised in a good way. I was like, oh, okay. Like, this isn't just like, I'm not the only, you know, person of color in like a sea of snow.
Yeah.
Here, right. Which is
it must have been a relief.
Right? For sure. And I got, you know, so that was, you know, I think there was a lot of good faith on that content creator relations team, and good intentions in terms of the kinds of folks who were invited. So that out of the way. And then started trickling in, I think, some prickles of negativity, I would say. I would say Lynn Codega's tweet is probably the largest one, just because of like the platform and the reach they have. But they were certainly not the first person to tweet in a giving critique, I think, to the way that people were posting about being invited to the Content Creator Relations Summit, Content Creator Summit, and also maybe the concept of the summit in general. And the kinds of critique that folks received, I would say, ranged from very mild to like outright hateful. And I just want to be clear here. I don't think what Lynn Codega themselves posted was outright hateful. They never actually posted anything that was like vile or anything like that. And I just want to like get the record straight there. I do think that what they posted kind of maybe some folks saw it as like maybe permission or like an invitation to kind of start going into content creators' mentions and being like, you know, calling them shills, right? Or like calling them bootlickers, calling them like butt lickers.
Cloud chasers,
exactly, was a big term that was being thrown around, I think. You know, and I think that was when shit started going downhill, pretty big, pretty quickly. And I was kind of in the middle of drafting my own tweet about I was invited and like I'm using this as an opportunity to like tell Wizards my truth, you know, my feelings and, you know, my thoughts and my feedback. And then I started seeing all this shit coming out. And I was like, maybe it's a good thing that I like went to bed first instead of tweeting about it. Cause I was like, God damn, Jesus Christ. Like it was immediately like, sharks smelling chum in the water a little bit, I think. And I think a lot of the reason for this immense and very sudden backlash is also because there's still a lot of open wounds from that OGL fallout. And this was the first public big move on Wizards' part post-OGL to have any sort of community relations event or anything. And it was this content creator summit that they didn't post about, but then like a bunch of like creators posted about, right?
Which so, makes
like,
it more exclusive, right?
Yes.
Makes it seem like, oh, only these people were selected to
they're
go. The rest of you don't even hear about it.
Yes, which is, that's just mess. And like, the thing about that is the initial email didn't have anything in it that said like, hey, this is an NDA event. Please don't share that you're going, or like, don't share that you're invited. There was nothing attached to like the signature of the email that I see sometimes being like, any information shared in the content of this email is confidential. Please don't share it outside of this email. Nothing like that. It was just kind of like, here, you don't have any content requirements. Go for it. Yay. So I think folks, because there was no NDA or like no request initially, felt okay to post about it. And I think it was fine. Like legally, I don't think Wizards cared that they posted about it. But I think there was a lack of maybe forethought and foreplanning on Wizards' side about like, hey, tensions are still kind of sore. Maybe we should get ahead of this. Maybe we should get ahead of this and be proactive and post something on our official channels about this event that can then establish what it is and what it isn't and prevent a lot of pain and prevent a lot of like hurt feelings and some legitimate threats, actually, like actual threats and threats of doxing and kind of scary things that have happened to some specific content creators who have posted about this, right? And then, you know, Lynn's thread came out and then there was some like back and forth, right? Like some content creators stepped up to like sort of defend themselves against some honestly very unfair accusations about why they were going and what the event was in the first place, because, you know, the people making the accusations didn't have the email and had no idea what it was. I think there was, like you said, an assumption that it was some exclusive party, that there was like an element of being wined and dined by WotC, you know, some fear that like, if we went, we would go back on our ideals, like some fear that, the, you know, and some like exasperation perhaps and frustration that like, oh, like, of course you would like just go to this cool thing with Wizards, you know, even it, though it has, you know, the OGL's body isn't even cold yet, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, like, her body's still warm. Right? So, like,
yeah,
it was just kind of a shit fest, like, all around. And I felt very much like Donald Glover in Community, because I know you love Community, like, coming into the pizza box, right? Being like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
kind of like, content creators were almost like a proxy for Wizards during that time.
Yes.
Like a kind of like, everyone's still hurt and they need to take it out on someone, and apparently it's going to be the content creators. Yeah, I would love to say that, yeah, Wizards should have thought about that, but they haven't had a great history recently of having any forethought about these kind of things. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Liv. This really does, like, basically my feeling about the whole thing was, oh, I get why people are very skeptical about this, because the way it was handled by Wizards was weirdly mysterious. It's weird that they didn't come out and say, hey, everyone, we're going to be having this, and we've invited so many people, or something like that, up front. But also, because of the whole OGL fiasco, because of the lack of trust, Connie, that you mentioned, people have every reason to be skeptical of an event like this, and to be like, okay, well, let's see what people say. Let's keep an eye out, because there were some posts that I saw that were like, look, I will wait to reserve judgment on this, but right now my hopes are not high. But, and I also agree with you, I do not think that Linda Codega was actually trying to be harmful or hurtful.
Yeah,
with what
I don't
said.
Think so either.
I think the word choice was bad. I think using the phrase clout chaser was a bad idea. It just has too many negative connotations. And using, like, maybe not to Linda, but I think to most people, if you call someone a clout chaser, that's considered a criticism. That's considered a negative criticism, potentially even an insult. Yeah, and so I was like, I kind of get what you're trying to say, but I don't think it's having the effect you wanted.
Yeah. Like, I think I understood and honestly even kind of agreed with the heart of Lynn's argument. But like, I think I guess like the specific language and like the, I guess the way in which they laid out their argument in the thread was just like a little inflammatory, and it was exacerbating tensions when it could have attempted to open up a more reasonable dialogue. But also it's Twitter, like, you know, like also it's Twitter, so like true. It's not the place for reasonable dialogue. And I agree that the term clout chaser was inflammatory and probably not, like, was definitely not the best term they could have used in that situation. And I think it just kind of was kind of like a, it felt a little bit like a hunting horn went off. And like suddenly dogs were going, clout chasers! And like it was, you know, and that was the only thing that people heard from the thread, which I think is kind of unfortunate. And, you know, a lot of that is because of the terminology that was used. I also want to say that the thing that's also frustrating about this is there are legitimate critiques to be had and leveled at Wizards about the way they went about organizing this event and communicating information about the event, and even the way in which they like sent out invites to us, like through this third party and the communication or lack thereof about how to talk about this event. And it's,
and what exactly the event was going to be, and the details, what the format was going to be, all that stuff.
And those are all failures and missteps on Wizards' behalf, not on our back. Like, we didn't do anything wrong. The only crime that the content creators who were posting about it have committed, quote unquote crime, is being invited, right? And then having the audacity to share on their social media platforms, I was invited to this thing, right? And then it very much felt like the folks who posted about it were catching strays, like, in immensely. Like, people were trying to shoot at Wizards, but instead they were hurting the feelings of and the reputations of, and sort of swinging at the fences comprised of content creators who are sharing public information about this, right? And some people were going so far as to extrapolate that if folks were sharing publicly that they were invited, then that was a mark on their character morally, right? Like, oh, if you're posting about going, then you're a clout chaser, right? If you're posting about going, then you're just trying to elevate your own standing in Wizards, even if you're saying you're going to critique, which I think, like, I'm not sure if I agree with that argument necessarily. I don't know if
it's a very bad faith reading.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, and I think it's a lot more nuanced than just that, right? So that, you know, there was so much baggage immediately already before we even stepped on the plane, you know, before we even got on the plane, flew to Washington. So that was
Yeah. 3BH definitely, like, that was partly why we never said that we were invited, because we at some point got an email and we were like, I remember Jasper messaging me and being like, that moment when you see an email in your inbox from Wizards inviting you to the summit, and he had the Key and Peele sketch where he's just, Jordan Peele just sweating profusely. And it's just like, oh no. So yeah, that's why we never said anything. And I personally, I think, like, Liv, you could say if you disagree, but I fully condemn the behaviors of people who were going after content creators who were invited in that way, especially because it did seem to disproportionately affect marginalized people. I know Joan from Joan, friend of the show, 3BH Avengers. She had messaged me initially when she was invited and was very happy about it, and then had tweeted about it. And then I did not see direct backlash towards her, but I do know that based on her subsequent tweets, that it greatly affected her negatively. And I know that there were a number of people, I think including Joan, who felt it necessary even to make live streams trying to explain what actually email said.
Because
people were shooting from the hip with on this one and just attacking. I fully condemn that activity. There was I understand skepticism. I think that's justified. And I think maybe critical nuance is absolutely justified and necessary. But you can't be just going off like that, like the way that they did. It was they were attacking the wrong people.
I agree.
Yeah, they can't get to Wizards, so they were doing the next best possible thing in their minds, which was taking it out on creators. And I mean, in terms of posting about it, it just never crossed my mind to do it. I would have done, I just didn't even think about it. I was like, yeah, cool, I'll go to this thing. I guess it was a testament to how kind of low my expectations were of it. I just didn't think to post about it. But yeah, no, I think that, I agree. Just don't go after the creators. We're out here doing our best, you know, like, yeah.
So should we move on now that we've talked about what the initial communication was, or lack thereof, what the expectations were, and the backlash mess that all occurred with all the baggage leading into the event? Let's talk about the actual event. So there were, I believe, three sections. I'm following, shout out to Daniel Kwan again, because I'm following his summary of the events. Daniel, we will have him on the show someday, because he's great.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
But he said that the first session was opening remarks from the CEO of Wizards of the Coast, Cynthia Williams, and Dixon Dubow. Shout out to Dixon. I have met Dixon. Dixon is thebomb.com, who is with the D&D creator relations team. So in that part of the event, is there anything worth commenting on in the initial opening remarks from your perspective, Connie, as somebody who was there?
I took notes, and then I stopped taking notes after that event because I went, oh, this is what this is. So so I have the notes that I took right here on camera. And I wrote down like the list of the, you know, team members that came up on the slide. I know there were some intense technical difficulties, especially in the first half. Where there was like no video and like the audio was like super all over the place. Basically, the exact logistical layout was the day of the summit itself, because a lot of us came in like the night before. The day of the summit itself, I think that was like the Monday, we went to Wizards headquarters. We went to their office, one of their offices, and we, the in-person group, we were split into two different halves. So one half kind of went off to have this morning presentation as the first thing we did. I was part of like group A, let's say. And then group B was split off into further subgroups to get hands-on experience with their new VTT. And the first half, and then we swapped, right? So then group A split off into a bunch of smaller subgroups to do the VTT. And then the VTT groups like coagulated into one big group B. And then they experienced the same like opening remarks, essentially, is my understanding of what happened. And there was some virtual integration. I know they had like a webcam set up in like the atrium with like the big Drizzt like statue in the back. I don't know how well that went or if anyone was there for it on the virtual side, but there were opening remarks.
I was there for it and I couldn't see shit.
Okay, I mean, that is super fair. But my understanding is that those were the opening remarks and everyone was kind of in that atrium together, like all 30-ish of us in person and some like a good number of Wizards staff.
32.
Yes, 32. And then we split off into
32, 30 to 40 people were invited and 100 invited in person. 32 attended, 150 were invited to be virtual attendees, 80 to 90 attended. Sorry to interrupt. Please.
No, you're good. Those numbers sound correct based on everything, all the information I have. There were opening remarks. The remarks were just kind of like, you know, there were like nice, you know, remarks, nothing especially inflammatory or controversial. Just like, thanks for being here. We're excited to show you the future of D&D. Like, let's go do the thing, you know, and that was pretty much it. So nothing particularly stood out to me positively or negatively about that. And then we split off and then I went off to, I think they called it like their game room or something. And it's like this big room with like a big table that has like a literal like virtual table built into it, right? And then like some sofas and chairs and projection screens and whatnot. And then we received the D&D Beyond presentation. And I took notes. I took a lot of notes about the D&D Beyond presentation. I took like 4 or 5 pages and then I was like, why am I taking notes? I don't use D&D Beyond.
Yeah, but I would have loved to have been there where you like looked the presenter in the eye and slowly closed your notebook.
No, that literally, I think that literally happened though. I was like, oh, okay. They're asking about like, how do we make, you know, we're talking about the mobile play experience and what are some key features we want to get up to parity there, right? And like, you know, our vision for D&D Beyond, you know, as like a theme park for D&D, right? And like ideas about what should we build next? Now we're, and so when they opened they basically just did like a big presentation on D&D Beyond and the future of it, right? Because the D&D Beyond team was acquired about like a year ago, I want to say. So there were like some team members who had just been integrated. And then they opened up the floor to what should we build next? And then there were like several suggestions and questions from folks about like, oh, any thoughts about a physical and digital bundle, right? Like, oh, if you buy like a physical book, could you integrate it digitally, right? And like, oh, like a suggestion for like being able to change DMs, you know, in a campaign, mm-hmm. and like implementing like an admin role that isn't just DM locked, right? Being able to change the number of players, NPCs, guests, like actual feature requests, right? And like stuff mm-hmm. like that were very D&D beyond like geared toward, you know, suggestions and questions about legacy edition support, stuff like that. And I kind of started to tune out at that point because I was just sort of like, okay, this is just not my wheelhouse. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. a software dev. I'm not like a D&D Beyond sponsored AP show. You know, like I'm a content creator who makes like really gay art, you know? So like this, it really didn't feel relevant to me. And I would like, a part of me was like, why did you invite a bunch of content creators? Not all of us who use this platform and not all of us mm-hmm. have the experience or interest in being able to talk about it with the kind of rigor that like a focus group might be able to give you, right? So like, mm-hmm. and then someone stepped up and asked a question about like accessibility. Like, oh, all these cool new like features that you want to have, like, what is your plan for making it accessible? Because the more stuff you add on to a product, the less accessible it becomes, just kind of like by nature of having a product that scales upward in terms of complexity. And the particular person who asked this question was like a, oh God, I'm so, Dr. B, I'm so sorry if I'm misrepresenting what you do in the space, like a disability, like, focused psychologist, I think, and like not necessarily even like a content creator, like a TikToker or a cosplayer, but like someone who focuses on like disability justice and disability rights, right, from like a clinical and psychology lens, right? And I actually spoke to him afterward, and he was kind of like, yeah, I don't know why I was invited, because I figured they'd invite me for my specific experience and expertise as like a disability person. So I was trying to think from that perspective, and I was like, you know, and the answer he got was very much like, well, think about it. You know, like, oh, thanks for bringing up, we'll think about it, you know, and like they didn't really have any answers, so he's just kind of like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm not a software dev, what am I doing here, right? So like I brought up during that conversation of like, oh, maybe there could be like I'd love for there to be more customizability, just generally speaking, and maybe like a scaling level of customizability, because I don't do race the way you have to do race on D&D Beyond. That's a big reason why I don't use it. Like, we don't tie racial feats to the base race you pick, right? And, you know, I was like, are there going to be ways to address that in the future? And I'm sure there's like tons of other use cases beyond just like race building that my concern might address, you know, and like talking, you know, in terms of what Dr. B said, like this, a scaling version of customizability would also maybe like help with this accessibility. Like if there was a version of D&D Beyond, like a basic version that you could toggle on that like just has your stats and like your spells and that's it. You know, you don't have to look at any of that other shit, right? Like that, I think would make it a lot more accessible. Like, so stuff like that, just like little, you know, things back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the general response from the D&D Beyond like developer team and like the WotC staff that were there was like, oh, thanks for like bringing this up. We'll make a note. That was it, right? They were like, oh, well, we'll just take notes. And they couldn't really say anything too concrete about whether or not they would absolutely implement this or like specific ideas for how they would implement it, because, you know, my understanding was that none of it was really locked in yet. And a lot of features were very much in flight, right? Maybe even pre-flight, to be honest. So, you know, folks spoke up. I think someone else mentioned about like making D&D Beyond more accessible for like lower income areas and folks who don't always have a stable internet connection, you know, and like, you know, questions about that. And there was kind of like a dodged answer for that as well, but more of a, like a good idea, we'll think about it, you know, sort of situation. So yeah, there were also some interesting questions about the D&D marketplace. I think this was a virtual attendee question during my group. Like someone brought up like, how is the D&D marketplace going to work? Like, what's the revenue share going to look like, you know, like for third-party creators? And the person who fielded it, I think maybe misunderstood the question because he was like, oh, there is going to be like whatever you make, you're obviously going to own and you're going to make money off of it, but didn't say anything about percentage split, you know, because I think currently like DM's Guild takes like 50% or something like really outrageous. I've never published there, so I could just be quoting numbers out my butt. But I know it takes like a significant.
It's a higher percentage than most people would want.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there was no percentage exact split given. And there was also like, they were like, you would own it, but they didn't specifically say that like, you know, we would get to use it to, in any way, shape, or form either. But I assume that this is all like, you know, legal specifics that they will go over with a fine tooth comb when the D&D marketplace is ready to launch. And it doesn't feel like it's ready to launch, like certainly not in the next few months. So you know, those are my notes. I kind of give you a play-by-play of all the notes that I took for that particular meeting of the group I was in. So by the end of it, I had closed my notebook and stopped writing.
Completely fair. Just to jump on that as well, Connie, when I was there for the morning, the office hour section I was in, it seemed very similar, a very similar vibe of just kind of like, oh yeah, cool, great. We don't know about that, but we might eventually, that kind of thing. And also, I noticed that for the virtual, I'm not sure how this manifested in the face-to-face version, Connie, but they had gone to great lengths to have interpreters for people who weren't able to hear. And I was like, that's great. That's awesome. But then I'm pretty sure people were asking questions regarding accessibility who are differently abled, and they didn't really have any answers. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like,
so my understanding of the inclusion of interpreters for virtual attendees is that someone in the invite list was like, hey, are there going to be interpreters for this event? And Watsi was like, yes. And then like this was a few weeks ago, right? Watsi was like, yes, there are. And then like a few days before the event, I think the same person followed up and was like, hey, are there going to be interpreters for the event? And they were like, no. So this person, this attendee, like, was like, I work in the, you know, in like disability rights, and like was able to get like some interpreters kind of last minute. Okay. And my understanding is that the reason, like, that, but it wasn't Watsi. They didn't do it proactively. Okay. Nope, they did not do it proactively.
Okay. That's good to know.
I'm not going to like name
retracting that here, W.
Yeah, right? I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, this is what you're describing sounds similar to what I heard in reports, which is that they came in trying to showcase the VTT, but actually were not able to answer many questions about it, either because they hadn't considered some of the stuff that people were saying, or just the people who would have actually been able to answer may not have been present. That was the impression that I received. I don't know if the dev team was there like fielding questions, but it sounds like consistently people would bring stuff up and they'd be like, oh, is that something you'd want? Okay, write that down, write that down. And the vibe was like, yeah, we'll definitely consider. But remembering the email that you read, the VTT, all that stuff was listed last. This session sounds fine to do at the end of a day. You know what I mean? Like, if it's like, okay, we've answered all your questions, now let's talk about what we're planning, and we can try and apply the stuff that we've already described to, you know what I mean? Like, the questions we've already fielded, you can now try and bring that back up and see now this would be an area where you could apply. Like, I would not have had an issue with this if it was, okay, we've had 6 hours of what we actually initially described. Now here's the other thing we mentioned. Whereas this, you not taking notes anymore makes perfect sense, because it sounds like it's like, oh no, the parenthetical was actually the main focus.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was very much the feeling. I have a lot of feelings about how I think they could have run this in like a much better way. And I'll get to that probably like in a second, because I have thoughts about, very minor thoughts about the VTT presentation as well. So like after everything I walked y'all through about like the D&D Beyond presentation, like my group, we then split off into small like subgroups, and then each of us went into a different room that had like a fancy Alienware laptop, you know, and they were all like wired in, and like the Alienware laptops were like really, really, really hot, and they were like running this VTT, right? And I'm like, damn, if this like high-end Alienware laptop is like chugging and huffing and puffing like a, you know, like... And they were like, oh, we want to make sure that the VTT will be like a mobile available experience. And I'm like, damn, I don't know if that is physically possible, my dude. So to be fair, it's like a they showed us like a pre-alpha build of it. It's like a very, very vertical slice of the software that they were developing. And we played through like a mock session of like a D&D session, right? So one of the devs, I think he was one of the devs, was the GM, you know, and like we had like these pre-gen characters, and like the VTT, for what it's worth, is beautiful. It looks like a AAA video game. Like the graphics are incredible. Like it looks gorgeous. Some issues with the camera scrolling and stuff like that, and you know, my biggest, you know, fears are I don't think a you know, most people's computers would be able to handle this. And, you know, the features that they had were really shiny and neat. You know, there were shiny bells and whistles and they were neat, right? It, like, they populated, they had like a cool animation for a monster that appeared, you know, on in the terrain. Like there was some cool stuff about, you know, kind of, you had like a hot bar at the bottom where, I don't know if that's what it's called, hotkeys, a bar at the bottom with hotkeys that you could tap, like kind of look like a WoW UI a little bit. So if you were a rogue and you wanted to like sneak attack, you could just like press a button and a bam, like you could like activate that, right, and roll that dice, right? There were like some cool things about like how the tokens appeared and what dice looked like in the BTT. But it was very much just like, here's a shiny new toy, like drive around with it and like try it out. And my group, for what it's worth, like we didn't have too many questions. We were just like, this is cool, nice, neat. Yeah, this is still in development, right? Cool, okay, so I have thoughts about the camera. Oh, you knew that already. Okay, cool. Well, I have thoughts about the music and oh, you knew that already. Okay. Well, I have thoughts about how like the names are displayed and oh, you're aware of that. Cool. Okay. Great. You know, like cool. Wonderful. And then it was lunchtime. And then we went to lunch and like half the day was over, right?
Oh, wow. Should we move on to the second session with that?
Yes.
At that point?
Yes, I would love to.
Wild.
Some context for lunch. This was, you know, around the time, so the second session happened at the hotel that we were at, like in this like big conference room that they had. And our understanding was that the second half of the summit would be split into two parts. The first part would be another VTT presentation. And then the second part would be Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins coming in to talk about the core rules update for like the next version of fifth edition, right? And to feel like and have like a Q&A session at like the end of both of those events. So during lunch, I sat with, you know, some cool folks, and I was just kind of like, you know, I was like eating my food and thinking like, you know, I was just sitting there like reflecting and processing and going, So I asked a few people like, hey, folks, how are we feeling about what's been going on so far?
What's the vibe?
And like the general sentiment from the people I was eating lunch with was like, not what I was expecting. Kind of disappointed that this is what is going on. Like, I hope the second half has more like substance. And like has more answers for us too, because we were asking questions and we were not getting answers about anything, you know? And I was like, okay, let's hope that the second half is better too. And then we went into the second half. And this was some like, some poor dude who's in charge of the VTT, right? He had this like whole PowerPoint presentation, you know, he's like, oh, like here are the goals of the VTT. And like, he was like really excited about it, right? And then like, but like we were, but the content creators were sitting there being like, what is, like, this is not when we came. Like, there's a general sense in the room of, like, okay, we're done. We're
done with
the temperature's
rising.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was kind of like being in, like, I felt like I was a little bit in, like, not a pressure cooker, but in, like, a kind of confused theater where, like, you came to see Hamlet and it's West Side Story. And you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, you know, like people are just sitting there like, this isn't bad, I guess, but like it's not the bar, it's like not what we were expecting, right? Like it's just not,
this is different. This could have been fun, but I didn't come for this. I don't like musicals.
Exactly. And there was a sense of just like, I think a general sense of confusion, and like it kind of felt like there was a miasma in the room, from my perspective at least. Like no one was really addressing like the elephant in the room, which is the OGL, and the fact
there was
that
a growing elephant.
Yeah, there was a growing. The elephant was very small at the beginning, but by now it was like fully an adult. It was an adolescent. But right? There was an elephant in the room, and it was an adolescent, and it was inside this dude's PowerPoint, right? So like, so I just completely tuned out for the entire presentation. Like, I was sitting next to Jay, and we were just drawing pictures on our notepads back and forth. I was just not paying attention because I was like, this is not relevant to me. I don't use VTTs. Like, this is cool, you know, and like kudos to this dude who spent a lot of time working on this presentation, but like it's not relevant to me. And then they opened it up to Q&A. And that was a little bit when stuff really started popping off a bit. How they handled Q&A in person is they handed out like initiative cards, basically. So you raise your hand and they give you an initiative card, and the initiative like one through, I think they only had like six or seven, and it would be in order of that you'd receive the card. And I got like number two or three or something like that, because I was sitting right by the front. And like the first few questions that folks asked, I think in person, were in relation to the VTT. There were like VTT specific questions, and I honestly kind of, forget what they were, but they were about like, oh, these features, blah, 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 you know, like what have you. And then like, you know, they called my number for the initiative card and I took the mic and I was like, hey, I was basically like, what are we doing here? I was like, so I'm just going to straight up say, like, I feel like there has been a misalignment of expectations. And like, speaking for myself, I came here expecting to be able to give feedback about the direction of D&D and like my feelings about like your handling of like all these things like race, accessibility, equity, or whatever. I forget the exact way I said it, you know, but I was like, you know, and I have another part of my question too, because in my head, I was like, my question was going to be either more or less inflammatory and angry based on how they would answer this pre-question. And my pre-question was, well, do you have any time planned for the rest of this summit for us to be able to like talk about concerns other than like D&D Beyond and the VTT, you know? And like, this dude was like, he was a VTT guy. He was like, I don't fucking know.
How did that elephant get in my PowerPoint?
Exactly. Like,
walking out onto the stage.
Yeah, so think I could be wrong on this. So like, I don't want to be necessarily quoted on this. I think it was Kyle Brink who took the mic and fielded the question, or like another WotC executive, right? A higher level dude who could actually field the question. It was either way, was a white dude, right? He was like, I can field this question. And he basically like, I don't exactly remember what he said. But it was basically kind of like a wishy-washy answer. He was like, there's going to be time to discuss the core rules update with Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins after this, you know, like, but for now, like, this is, you know, it's about the, you know, VTT or whatever, right? And I was
as we've discovered previously, Kyle is very good at that.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a non-answer that I got to my question. And I was like, okay, thanks. And then we took a break, right? And then we took a break before coming back. Mm-hmm. And during the break, like outside the conference area, like folks, like other content creators were coming up to me being like, thanks for saying that. Cause I feel like kind of like I was in a state of hypnosis up until that point, being like, why am I here? And then, oh, right, that's why I'm here, right? Or like, you know, being like, yeah, like I feel the same way. Like I'm not here to just like look at their shiny new toys, you know, like feel, you know, I think what I said as part of my question was like, this feels like a product showcase or a PR event. And that's not what I came here for.
This is an expo,
right?
Not a summit.
Exactly. This is not a summit. So, you know, just organically, a kind of like circle formed outside of the presentation area where like we were all just kind of airing grievances to each other. And then this dude, bless his heart, I think he was a member of the content creator relations team. He came up, he had a notepad. He was like, hey, so thank you, Connie, for like bringing that up. Do you or any other folks have like actual like specific questions you wanted us to address about just like anything in general? Or folks started talking about their actual concerns, like about accessibility, about the harassment, you know, like not just around this event, but just in general that we necessarily receive as being D&D related content creators. So any misstep D&D takes is a reflection on us and it hurts us and hurts our livelihood. Stuff like that. People were starting to say like, yeah, like I really put my life on hold to come here and I feel really upset that like we're not getting to talk about the things that we were here to talk about. And like other folks were saying like, yeah, a lot of us were called clout chasers and shills and even received actual threats for coming. And it kind of feels like they're right by this point, you know, like we have not had the chance to actually say our feelings. And if this is how the event goes, then, you know, those criticisms were actually correct. Like we just came here and we just ate free food and we just played your toys and left, you know, and like, that is not okay with us. You know, like that is not what we came here for. Like emotions were starting to increase by this point. So this dude, he was writing furiously. Oh my God, this man was going all over the pad. And this guy was actually like, I got the sense that he was actually genuinely very much trying to listen to us. And he was like, thank you for like bringing this up. Like, I'm going to run this up the chain of command and I'm going to see what we can do. Right. So then, you know, at the end of break, there was an announcement to all of us like, hey, we're going to, based on kind of the feelings and the tensions in the room, right? We're going to do an impromptu before the D&D core rules update section. We're going to do an impromptu like 30-minute Q&A session for all of you to like be able to ask whatever questions you might want related to the VTC or D&D Beyond or not. Like 30 minutes and you'll get to do it, right? And we were like, great. So we went back in and the 30-minute Q&A session started. I think Kyle Brink was one of the people fielding questions. There was like one other WotC exec. Neither of the dudes fielding questions were Christopher Perkins or Jeremy Crawford.
Jeremy Crawford, right.
Yes. Yeah. And we actually, one of us even asked while this person, this WotC employee was giving this announcement, like, hey, will Jeremy and Chris be there? And they were like, yes. They never showed up. They did not show up until the Q&A was over, even though it ran past 30 minutes. I think in total, the Q&A actually went for 90 minutes total.
I mean, of course.
And I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins didn't show up. They just didn't show up until it was their turn to talk about the core rules update. And like tensions had kind of diffused by then, which I have a lot of feelings about. I kind of felt like they hid from us, which I'm kind of upset about. So anyway, the Q&A began. And it was intense. And actually, before it started, CB was like, can I say something Critical before Bard. We begin? Critical Bard, yes, Omega. Mm-hmm. We love Omega in this house. They were like, so I just want to address something before we begin, which is that like folks have been kind of dismissive to people asking questions up until this point. And there has been like a kind of sense of disrespect coming from people who are answering the questions. And I just want to make sure that doesn't happen again, you know, and like, you know, folks were like nodding and like agreeing with that. And I felt very grateful that CB stood up and said that because, you know, I'm glad that he just straight up named it and said it. Caught it what it was. And then the Q&A session began. And here's the high level. First of all, my general high level takeaway from the Q&A, which is that honestly, the executive dudes, I mean, for lack of a better term, like a lot of like the like cis het, like white dudes who fielded the questions had not
the people
a lot
that
of-
Kyle Brink thinks should leave the hobby.
But who aren't, who don't, and who won't, right? Like,
right,
let's be real.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Didn't have great emotional acumen, let's say. And like, despite what CB said, they were still kind of answering some questions kind of shortly or dodging answers. At one point, I think it was Kyle, someone asked a question, you know, it was when Jay was asking to extend the Q&A session past the 30-minute runtime, and we put it to a vote. Basically, because Jay was like, I think if we put it to a vote here, like a lot of people in this room would vote to extend the Q&A session. And Kyle Brink was like, okay, fine, whatever. Like, oh, you know, but he had, up until the point, he had said something like, oh, you know, we're all excited to get to the, you know, part of this that we actually came here for, you know. The core rules update, and he rolled his eyes a little bit when he said that. And that was kind of when like some people like left the room because that was just like, oh, like come on, dude. Like you can't respond like that. You can't. So Jay has to put it to a vote at the end of the initial 30-minute period, and like almost every single person, like two-thirds majority or something, like definitely over half of content creators in the room, like myself included, we raised our hand. And I think virtual folks were also like in chat going like, yes, we want to extend it. And there was a lot of support for that in chat as well. But I wasn't there in person. Like just some of my friends who were in there in chat were like, yeah, there was a lot of support for the folks in the room, in the virtual chat. So there were a lot of like just dodged questions and like just poor emotional handling, I think, of a lot of genuine concerns from like the white dude execs. And but in contrast, a lot of the younger, right, folks on the content creator relations team were actually giving genuine answers, like Dixon, you know, and Sarah Chaffee, also, you know, Latia, and I think there was one other person whose name and whose face I'm forgetting, but I feel like there were four people. There were four people who were actually giving us answers, and like there are no other answers from anyone else. And kind of like by the end of the Q&A period, everyone was like really, was like there was a ton of support for Dixon specifically in the room because Dixon would actually take the mic and like actually give real answers and, you know, thoughts and ideas about some of the concerns that were raised. Speaking of which, some of the concerns that were raised that I was in the room for, because I did have to step out like briefly just to like gather myself for a second and to check on some folks who had stepped out as well. Regarded accessibility, right? What are like the accessibility programs at D&D and like what, and also like protection of like the freelancers, right? Like what are you doing to help freelancers who are hitched to your product and who help your product grow, who are getting harassment, who are getting our livelihoods impacted by this, who are getting like death threats even, and who, you know, working as a D&D freelancer and contractor is like a huge toll on our mental health, right? Because of, you know, decisions by WOTC at a high level that are out of our control. And like WOTC employees have health insurance and they have access to counseling and they have access to mental health services. Like, what are you going to do to like help, you know, freelancers who also help your product be the amazing product that it is? You know, like stuff like that. That was one question that stood out to me that I remembered. I asked a question about race You know, I was like, I know that there is a pivot from race to species language. And hilariously, it was this exact morning. And this was why I had to like be escorted like privately to the WOTC campus, is because I was late. I let them know in advance. I had an interview with NPR on 1A specifically about race in D&D and their switch to species based language. Right. And they had specifically asked me to give my perspective because of my experience and my expertise in this particular like field. Right. An aside, they had to cut me off. They had to play me off because I misunderstood the assignment. I thought I would have 60 minutes to talk. I had like 4 minutes to talk. So I was like, I'm watching the right notes. Right. Anyway. So I asked a question about like, oh, the pivot from race to species-based language, like how do you plan on mending trust specifically within communities of color, like creator communities of color, about your consistent mishandlings of race historically and currently, right? Like the Hadozi, like if we go back even further, like everything about orcs and stuff, you know, just the discussion of mixed race people, right? And like the core rules update, I gave like a bunch of examples, right? And like Kyle kind of fixated on like the one example I gave of like race to species based language, you know, and he was like, oh, this is because like blah, 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 right? And it wasn't until like Sarah Chaffee, I think, had to step in and go, oh, so I think the question underneath your question, Connie, is like, is D&D going to appeal to bigots? And no, it is not. Like, we're not like, and that was the question under my question, yeah. Right? Like, I was kind of probing, like, you know, how are you going to tackle race in the future, and how are you going to repair that trust? Because there's been a lot of ruptured trust, and Sarah was the one.
Are you going to definitively take a side?
Yes, exactly. For once. Exactly. Yes, for once. Yeah. And Sarah was like, yes, we are against. Sarah had to say, we are against racism. We are against homophobia, transphobia. Like,
clarified. Yeah.
Kyle did say that, you know, like straight up. So I was like, okay, word. All right. So that was a question I asked. And other folks, you know, I think it was KP who asked about like race in general, you know, and like, how do you want to support marginalized specifically and like creators of color? Right, who, you know, in the space and like help us grow and stuff like that. Indrani of Nonagon Dice, I think, is her handle on Twitter. Like, they asked a really good question about like support for people who aren't American, right, and like aren't in Western countries. Like, they are a Mumbai-based creator, and they're like, like, how are you going to help people who like aren't in the Western world, right? Because that's a huge group of people who play TTRPGs and play D&D who receive very little to no economic support, right? Or even thought, right? Stuff like that. So really great questions all around. Very few answers given from execs, much more answers given from the content creator relations team, who like who they were real champs. Like, salute to them. They like tanked a lot of those questions with a lot of grace.
Thank you, first of all, for that, the depth that you were able to go into. What you've just described is pretty much the impression that I had received, just in much more detail. It appears that consistently, from my observations, the creative part of the D&D team is comprised of people who are wanting to move the game forward and wanting to be progressive and wanting to make the changes that need to be made. It seems like they are often hampered sometimes by having teams that are not as diverse as they would need to be to have the necessary perspectives, and not basically not having the voices in positions of power to be able to guide them to make the best changes. Because like, regardless of what one thinks of the species change, I think it was an attempt. Like, they tried.
They tried.
It may have been a swing and a miss for a lot of people, but like, they were swinging at least. But it seems as though that is the more positive side of things, the creator side. I consistently hear things, even for people who were dissatisfied with their time working at the company, they will usually say those people were trying their best. Like, I respect those people, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like most of the criticisms lie with the executives. The suits, essentially. Yeah. And look, I have only met Kyle once. He was nice when I met him. I don't hold ill will towards him, but it does sound like he was ill-equipped both informationally and emotionally to handle this session, based on your description. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, in general, the executives just are not in a position to be able to make these changes, answer these questions. Their perspective is so far removed from hours that it's like they're in different worlds.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear that the execs are always going to be thinking about the bottom line, which I guess makes sense for their role. But yeah, it was very clear to me because I was in a group with Latia, and yeah, she was phenomenal. And you could just tell that like she lives and breathes D&D and like wants everything for, you know, the creators and the community. And it sounds like it's such a stark contrast to what you were seeing there from Kyle and other execs.
No, 100%, 100%. It very much like general takeaway felt like there was that schism, that a pretty significant gulf between like the younger content creator community facing teams at Wizards versus like the execs and honestly kind of the design teams as well, like the folks who are actually making the content, the fully employed like tenured folks, right, as opposed to like freelancers who can be as diverse as they want them to be, right?
Right,
not that there aren't younger and diverse designers at WotC who are pushing for change. There are, you know, but it feels to me, just based on my experience at from the summit, it feels a little bit still like an upward climb. I also remember the fourth person that I was blanking out on, the director of DEI at Wizards, Chantel. She also gave us like a lot of actual answers and was able to speak toward like the DEI programs at Wizards and their approaches moving forward and whatnot.
And what does DEI stand for?
DEI, a diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the issue is that the diverse people are not in positions of power, which is what I tried to ask Kyle about during our interview. I was like, look, you're making changes, you're trying to make changes, but when you look at the people at the top, it is still, the walls are still beige. And is there any chance for us to get some color in here? And the answer is, well, not if we wait. I'm not surprised. Like everything you're saying, I'm not surprised. It's a shame that it worked out the way that it did, but I commend you and the other attendees for making your voices heard absolutely. And going out of your way to make sure that this summit did actually serve the function of being a summit in which you were actually able to give useful, actionable feedback and criticisms.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate you saying that. And like, you know, shout out to the creators who really went out on a limb and like said some, you know, shared personal stories or like really like, just like spoke very candidly about what they needed from Wizards and what they wanted to hear from Wizards. What you said actually made me think of a question someone asked about like, what are you doing? Like exactly that question. Like, what are you doing to address the lack of diversity at like a higher level, you know, for like writers and designers, right? Because, you know, if the requirement is that you need to have 10 to 15 years of design experience in the tabletop industry, you're not going to get any people of color or women or disabled people like or queer people. You're just not, because that's just not a feasible like resume bullet point for those kinds of for marginalized people to have.
We've just about wormed our way in as it is.
Yes, exactly. Like- exactly. Like I've only been working in this industry like 3 years, right? So, like less than 3 years. And the answer from like the executive level was like, oh, well, anyone can apply.
I'm sure they can.
Like, okay. You know, like, so it's just responses like that I think pointed to the fact that they're honestly really out of touch. And it's difficult too, because I feel like I just have like complicated feelings in like, I've now, it's been several weeks since the summit, right? I've had time to really process my experience and think about my place in TTRPGs as a whole. And there's a reason why I say TTRPGs as a whole and not D&D, because I have taken a kind of intentional and conscious step away from the brand of D&D and my career and my projects and my, you know, reputation, for lack of a better term, as a creator in the TTRPG space. Because it just kind of feels like they just keep fumbling. They kind of just keep fumbling. Yeah. And also like, the game has gotten me, you know, this far in my creative journey, and I feel like I'm in a place where I'm kind of outgrowing the game itself, you know. And the stuff that, you know, Chris Perkins and Jeremy Crawford eventually came and presented about for like the core rules, like the updates about weapons and stuff like that, like it's cool for sure, but like it's just also not, I feel like I'm growing faster than D&D is, and I am no longer willing to wait for them to catch up to me. And I think that much was made very evident during the summit. There are incredible people at Wizards, who are really striving and pushing for change, who need to be paid more than what they're already being paid. You know, even if they're being paid well, they need to be given a bonus for all that freaking emotional labor they had to take on during the summit. Like, honestly.
But, elephant care, very difficult.
Yeah, elephant care. Yeah, very. Yeah, they were scrubbing our toes, right? They were like cleaning the ivory of our tusks. You know, but honestly, like D&D and Wizards of the Coast, I believe they have a responsibility as stewards of the game and also stewards of the communities that surround the game to reflect in their design, in their hiring practices, in their company policies, and in the way they interact and treat the creators in their community, to reflect the values of the community around them. And it, you know, and to be really careful about the attention they court. Because some of the responses I got, like, of the Q&A, you know, my general sense, I asked the race question again to Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins, you know, because they were the folks in charge of the design. And their response to me was like, oh, for now, it's not set in stone yet. Like, nothing is set in stone, which is optimistic, right? But for now, we're pivoting to species because we, like, had this, like, round of, like, feedback with Jontel, right? And, like, with, like, some other, like, sensitivity consultants, right, around race. And they told us that species was the best pivot, you know? And, like, ultimately, it seems to be the most popular, you know, pick for our community at large. And we're trying to appeal to what's the most popular thing. And I'm like, that's fine. And I understand that D&D, at the level and size of the company that they are, they kind of have to appeal to the broadest demographic. I suppose I understand that. If we look at the D&D movie, they couldn't just appeal to D&D players. The movie needed to have a general audience appeal. It needed to bring in people who liked fantasy in general, who liked action in general, who liked the talent attached to the story, right? So, and the D&D movie,
it was marvelified for sure.
Yes, it straddles. There are some in jokes, but not so much that people who don't understand D&D feel alienated, right? So, like, I see on, like, that reflected in the direction of D&D as well. They kind of want to have some representation, but not so much that people who are a bit more bigoted, honestly, like, feel left out. And that is just what they're going to do. And that is what I got from the summit. This was not a surprise, right, necessarily at all, but, you know, it is what it is, you know, and like I'm at a place where I'm making a decision to, you know, like, do what I'm going to do with it.
They're going to do what they do and we're going to do what we do.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
We've been there too. I think when we first talked about the OGL stuff, we said that we'd already discussed it as a team, that we have been trying increasingly to pivot away from just representing D&D, or if we're doing D&D, to try and represent something that is not just Wizards of the Coast being made by the D&D team. Like, not that we're going to shun the topic, not like we're never going to discuss it, but focusing on, we just this day, this very day, recorded a session with Friday, GM Friday, who, small independent creator who is working on the Vineyard RPG, which, yes, is D&D compatible. We did use D&D, but it ain't a D&D product. And it's like, we're trying to support her. As of recording, we just dropped episode 6 of Big Trouble in Little Manus onto the feed. We have more one-shots and miniseries and so forth planned for later this year that are not using the system. I'm with you, Connie, when we started the show, and this, I know that some of the fandom, when we initially had made our statement about, like, look, we're not interested in just pursuing or even primarily pursuing D&D, I know some fans were disappointed because they were like, they appreciated that we always took sort of an optimistic look at things and never were all doom and gloom like many people are. I don't necessarily see it as doom and gloom. I see it as a realistic reaction. If you just observe the pattern, they have told you what kind of animal they are. There is no point in expecting the cat to act like a dog when the cat keeps showing you it's a cat. You're gonna have to just accept that it's a cat, and if you don't want a cat, don't adopt a cat. Like, that's the answer. If you don't want to deal with this, don't keep dealing with the cat. If you don't want to deal with D&D with the having the ethos that they want to appeal to both sides as much as possible and move at a glacial pace away. That's still too fast for some on the right side, but is always going to be too slow for us. And it's just going to be a repeated every single time they release a new update. It's going to be the exact, we've been saying the exact same thing, which is, oh, good. Yay, they changed it. But they could have changed this and this and this and this and this. And they could have changed it in all of these ways. And actually, third-party creators have already released versions of all of this that are better than what they just released. Mm-hmm. It's like, how many times are we supposed to say this before it's like, look, guys, this is what we're getting. Like, this is what they're going to do. So, yeah, I'm right there with you, Connie. There's mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
The game is what it is. I'm glad they're making the changes. I encourage them to keep making the changes. I encourage the people who are involved to keep fighting. And who knows, maybe we will have something completely unexpected and there will be a real seed change. And you'll see, like, the people at the lower levels and the mid levels who are really pushing for those changes get promoted to higher positions where they actually have power and the executives stand aside long enough for them to make the changes that the game needs. And there were little bits of that. In some of the 1D&D stuff, you have stuff like inspiration being given for natural ones, which is like, oh, okay. But yeah, exactly. They're encouraging failure now. They're now rewarding just trying. Obviously, like, graded successes is something that I think should absolutely be implemented. Stuff like that. There's so much.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And, like, also, like, plus one to what you said about how indie creators and anyone who has ever homebrewed a rule at their D&D table, which I think is, like, pretty much every single person who's ever played D&D, like, have been doing the things that we want to do for our tables since we've been playing, right? So, like, I've been homebrewing how I handle race ever since the jump. I've been homebrewing grades of success. I've been homebrewing cinematic approaches to combat. I've been homebrewing, like, this, you know? So, like, when they add stuff to, like, kind of inch it that way, I'm like, well, okay, that was, like, 3, 4, 5 years ago for me. You know, yeah, I'm on to the next thing, right? So, like, I have tempered optimism about the current, like, associate and, like, mid-level folks at Wizards and on the D&D team moving up the ladder. I just hope they're not headed for a glass cliff. And I don't know if I, given the display that we saw at the summit, I don't know if I trust the executives to not do that or not put people in that position. And for folks who are unfamiliar with the term glass cliff, it is when people who are very, like, diverse in some way, typically, like, a woman or a woman of color or a queer person, usually people of color, are put in, like, a visible kind of high level position right when a company is hurtled toward controversy. So they're kind of set up to fail, right? And they take the fall. They fall off the glass cliff, and that's kind of used as an excuse for, well, this diverse woman made our company fail. We're going to go back to a white man, you know? So we see
the scapegoat completely.
Exactly. So I just hope that's not what's going to happen. And I hope, you know, there is going to be a lot of actual, genuine, like, sustainable, you know, change happening at Wizards. That's what I have to say about it. You know, like, kudos to everyone fighting for change on the inside and trying to do their best to see themselves reflected in the product that they give their lives to.
I have one more topic that I very briefly wanted to touch on. But before that, Liv, did you have any last thoughts on D&D in this whole situation?
Oh, God. I am tired both because it's late where I am, but also I'm just tired of all of it. Yeah, I completely agree with everything you've been saying, really. I don't know how much more of ourselves we can give to something that is not giving anything back to us, you know? And I think as well that throughout all these years, like you were saying, Connie, we have been, like, making our own stuff and figuring out what works and what doesn't. And I think that's manifesting in the fact that a lot of, like, creators are going on to make their own things that honestly supersede what we've been given with D&D I think at this point they just need to catch up to us. That's where we are at the moment for me.
And one more thing before we move on, just, we're not saying that we hate D&D. Again, we want to say we do not hate the game of D&D. I don't think anyone in this call hates the game. Definitely criticisms, but I still enjoy playing it in home games. We may still play it in public games from time to time. It's about the company primarily and the way that the game is being handled.
It's a shame. Yeah, because I love playing the game and I still have such a soft spot for it. But it's a shame that every time I play it, it kind of hurts a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Shame.
Yeah. So enough about D&D, Connie. Let's put our money where our mouth is. You have a game coming out that is not at all D&D in any way, shape, or form. Would you please talk to
it? You made a good thing.
Yes. Would you please tell us a little bit about Godkiller?
Absolutely. So Godkiller is my upcoming duet, Holy Punk, powered by the Apocalypse game for one player, the Godkiller, and one game master, God. This system is basically built to tell a mythic, violent, and transformative tale about a single mortal rising against the challenges of the divine. So if you like stories like God of War, honestly, like Mad Max Fury Road, anything where like kind of one person or like a small group of like mortals stands up against like a seemingly untoppable force, then Godkiller's for you. So we are currently in the middle. Pre-orders are open as of the recording of this episode. My cat is here. Hello, Bubba. He's here to slay me, his god.
he's just like, you should really check out Godkiller.
Yes, I feel like if he's a cat, he's God. In my experience, the cat is the real god in
absolutely
these situations.
But yes, pre-orders are currently open with the game itself. It's a digital-only Ashcan is going to be launching on my itch page. I'm by Connie Chong on itch.io, which is like a big indie games like marketplace online. I had been developing Godkiller with Magpie Games, who is the publisher behind like the Avatar Legends game. They're the ones behind Masks and New Generation. They're behind the Root RPG, stuff like that. Now that my Ashcan development period is over with Magpie, I am publishing it myself. So if you don't know what an Ashcan is, it's basically like a first edition of a game. It's like a playable alpha, right? So the Ashcan version of Godkiller, which is called the First Blood Edition, has core rules, like everything you need to just hit the ground running, make your own Godkiller and play a couple sessions, maybe even short campaign. And it's going to have some limited art and some limited layout. And it's going to be digital only. So there's not going to be a print run for the Ashcan. It's a PDF only. But I'm going to take all the revenue I get from the the digital-only Ashcan run of this to hopefully fund a full game in the future, which will also ideally include a print run. So my goal is to like do like a really cool Kickstarter or like a crowdfunder of like the full game of Godkiller, maybe like a year after or so. And to support the release of Godkiller, I am in the middle, as of the recording of this, of producing a series of Godkiller First Blood one-shots on Transplanar RPG's Twitch channel, featuring a God and Godkiller pairings in the TTRPG realm. And, you know, a halfling may or may not be involved in that one-shot series. Who knows? But we've had folks such as B. Dave Walters and Miss Gina Darling were a pair. We have had
Persephone?
Persephone and Jess Parsons were also a pair, and this coming weekend, as of the recording of this again, we are having Lexi of Black Girl Mage fame and Josephine McAdam come on and slay some gods, and we've got some really cool tables coming up as well. So that's every Saturday at 8 p.m. U.S. Eastern time on twitch.tv/transplanarrpg, running from when you hear this until Saturday, May 20th. 2023. And after that, we also have an official Godkiller First Blood prestige podcast series where I'm GMing. My partner C. Thomas is the Godkiller, and it's going to be like a 16-part podcast series to sort of help bridge hiatus content between our first and second main campaigns on Transplanar RPG. So if you can't get enough Godkiller goodness, you've got podcasts, you got streams, you got the game itself that you can pre-order. And that's the whole rigmarole.
So much content. You should consume it.
Yes, you should slurp it up. It's some good, good stuff.
Slurp, slurp.
Suck it up into your elephantine trunk and pour it down your gut.
Exactly. Oh, God. Though, speaking of pivoting away from D&D, the second main campaign that I'm running for Transplanar is also structured like by an arc by arc basis. So our different seasons, we call them arcs of the same campaign. And, you know, the central conceit of that campaign, it follows three interplanar agents who hop from plane to plane, reality to reality. And every arc is a different reality that utilizes a different TTRPG system. So I'm really excited to branch out and away from D&D for the second, you know, main campaign of Transplanar, and I'm excited to see like the different systems that Three Black Halflings has been using and like a lot of other AP channels in the space. You know, I've always thought it was, you know, D&D's monopoly in the space has been really odd. And also, like, it doesn't exactly create a very nuanced, creatively rigorous, or self-reflexive design and creator community to have only a single language through which we know how to talk to each other, right? Yeah. So, like, if we look at video games, like games broadly speaking, I don't think there's like a single game that dominates video games. There's like there's dozens, hundreds, thousands of games. People play all kinds of games. A single gamer like might play League as like her main thing, but probably also plays other games as well, you know? And like there's tons of gamers who play all kinds of games, right? They might like a specific genre of games, right? They might be a cozy gamer, right? Or like a competitive FPS player, right? Or maybe both, right? But there, I find it very rare that someone lets like a single game define their identity. And I think it's honestly, I think it's creatively unhealthy. So I think that like the more that we branch out as like a general ecosystem of people who are in TTRPGs, the better our community will be for it. And I also think it'll be better for D&D because it'll incentivize them to get off their laurels and innovate, you know, as opposed to just like riding on the coattails of the creators that make their game great.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Dicebreaker, which I also am a part of, we had a chat at some point and we were like, somebody suggested like outside the team, what if you just did all D&D? And we were like, no, absolutely not. Like, because there are so, we've always championed like different TTRPGs and, you know, things get stale if you just stick to one thing and there's so much content out there and there's so many like, honestly, creative geniuses who are making content all the time and we should explore it. It's great. It's good stuff, Ken.
I completely agree. Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. Go support Godkiller. Go check out Transplanar Campaign 2. But before that, check out the Godkiller one-shots as well as the Godkiller series. Cannot wait to see all of those things. And also, I very quickly, the next season of Transplanar inspired in any way by what is it, the lost something or other arc of the Adventure Zone Balance? Because what you were just describing sounds very reminiscent. And I know that you have enjoyed Balance in the past. And I was like, huh, branching out to different systems, traveling from reality to reality. Intriguing.
Yeah, no, actually, the only campaign, I suppose, of Taz that I've listened to has been Balance. So if this is like a different, I listened to like,
no,
Dust,
it's towards the end. It's,
oh, yeah, is it when it's towards it's the end when it's
like,
that
it's the, yeah, the Bureau of Balance when they're like, oh, going from reality to reality, being chased by this thing from reality to reality. I can't remember what system they used, but it's,
I think Griffin had like either homebrewed. No, I think they used the system, but I forget which one it was too. But no, actually, that is not one of the inspirations for this. It's actually hilarious that you bring that up because I love Balance. I think there is similarity in that the main characters of Campaign 2 are interplanar agents, but I think where that similarity ends is they're not like running away from a world-ending force. They're actually hopping from reality to reality to answer distress calls that their boss, Fate, has been ignoring since the beginning of time. Okay. But now she's like, you know, she's come back from a soul-searching journey and she's like, whoops, my bad. Here are all the prayers I've been ignoring. So like they have to go and like help people out who have been suffering for untold millennia. So there's that.
And I love it.
Yes. Yeah. Like classic Transplanar content. It's going to be about queer love, but also this time around, queer rage. So
yes,
if you're into that, you should absolutely
give me
it.
Go ahead, Liv.
I was just going to say, I know we've discussed a lot of stuff today, but I know it goes without saying that our wonderful community and whoever else outside of the community, I don't know, might listen to this, like Connie and the rest of the content creators who like put their neck out for everyone deserve a lot of kudos and respect. And like, I don't know, if for any reason you were going to take anything that's happened here negatively, maybe don't. Maybe have it, you know, check yourself or something. It sounds like I'm threatening someone, but no, I mean, just like, you know, it's all be loving and chill and good. Thanks, everyone. I'm going to leave now.
Well, thank you for saying that, Liv. No, I appreciate it because folks have just been like so out of pocket. People have just been so weird about it, you know? And like, even in the aftermath of the summit, there was even more discourse. Like I was seeing people being like, some really, truly like, capital T takes of being like, oh, yeah, y'all are posting like you returned from war or something, or like you're posting like you're organizing on the front lines of a revolutionary movement. And I'm like, okay, no, I don't think that's not how I've been posting about it or thinking about my time here, right? Or what happened, right? I think there's just like a lot of, like, there's we're never radical enough for leftists, right? And no, we are too queer and trans and have mm-hmm. too much cultural color, I suppose, for Nazis. So I'm like, you know, we're yeah. just going to go.
Right? Far too much. Yeah, so. No, I know. But we're all an extension of the community. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not the execs. We are the community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. On that note, Connie, where can people find you on the internet?
Yes. Y'all can find me at By Connie Chong, wherever, pretty much anywhere. On Twitter and TikTok are my main stomping grounds. That's BYCONNIECHANG. And I'll pass things back to you, halflings.
Yay.
Oh, wow.
Liv, where can the folks find you?
Oh, you can find me in my bed when I go to bed in a minute, but you can also find me over on Twitter. I'm Does Dark Magic on Twitter at Does Dark Magic, and I'm on everything else, Olivia Does Dark Magic, and I'm on youtube.com/dicebreaker and youtube.com/3blockhalflings, and you should subscribe to things and stuff. Thank you.
Yes. And I'm Jeremy Cobb. You can find me on Twitter at Jeremy Cobb 1, the Cobb with 2 B's, the number 1. You can follow me on Instagram at The Cobbmeister, and you can follow the show at 3, that's number 3 Black Halflings, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Pornhub, etc. And please, if you like what you hear or what? See in any of those places,
we gotta rewind that.
What? We weren't supposed to tell them about that, Drew.
Sorry. Don't, okay.
That's right.
Look, if you like big, hairy halfling feet, go check out the BBH.
I don't even like that. What are you talking about?
it's been too long. Thank you so much for listening. Go follow us on Patreon if you like all of that stuff for even more goodness. Patreon.com/TV Halflings, and we will see you next time. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.